Yes, thank you very much. My name is Frank Larney. I'm at Agriculture Canada in Lethbridge, Alberta. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors on this presentation. Lingling Li was a visiting scientist from Gansu Agricultural University in China, Drusilla Pearson, Bob Blackshaw, and Parthiba Balasubramanian. So I'm going to talk about a rotation study that we did from 2000 to 2011 for 12 years, located at Vauxhall, Alberta. And some of the reasons why we got into this work and sort of got it off the ground in 2000. In the late 90s, there was an expansion in the acreages of dry beans, potatoes, and sugar beets. And these are the predominant crops that are grown under irrigation in southern Alberta. So all three of them showed increased acreages in the late 90s. This brought some new growers into the mix, and it also put a squeeze on the existing land base. We only have so much irrigated land. So basically, by expanding these crops, did it sort of tempt some growers to actually tighten up the rotations. Wind erosion in southern Alberta is always kind of lurking in the background, and we were still seeing some wind erosion, especially on irrigated land, in the late 90s. But by then, the dryland farmers had actually had very widespread adoption of conservation tillage, and wind erosion on dry land was much less of an issue in the late 90s. But on irrigated land, we were still seeing some wind erosion. So that was always in the back of our minds when we were designing this study. So we wanted to ensure that this increased production was sustainable. And so basically we set about looking at crop sequences and tillage management systems for irrigated land that optimized crop response, minimized weed and disease problems, and reduced soil erosion, enhanced soil quality, and ensure long-term sustainability. So we compared conventional versus conservation practices for these rotations. And as I said, you're seeing another map of Canada here. The X marks the spot approximately where the study was located at 50 degrees north latitude. So what were these conservation practices that we implemented over the 12 years of the study? We applied composted beef cattle manure as a substitute for some of the inorganic fertilizer in the rotations. And southern Alberta is also home to a very large feedlot industry. So manure is in abundance, and more recently the manure has been composted. So some of the growers had questions about using composted cattle manure to replace some of their chemical fertilizer. Cover crops, it's well known that they fit into conservation systems. Fall seeded cover crops offer surface protection from wind erosion. Reduced tillage or direct seeding where possible in the rotations, and these rotations included potatoes and sugar beets. So these being root crops, the actual harvest operation does quite a bit of soil disturbance. But the other crops in the rotations, like dry beans and soft wheat, we could reduce tillage and do direct seeding. And then the fourth conservation practice was specifically related to dry beans. So basically the conservation practice was growing them in narrow row, 20 centimeter row spacing, straight cut, versus the conventional wide row, 60 centimeter dry beans, which are undercut at harvest. So narrow row beans were part of this, we'll call it a conservation package, which had these four practices. And the conventional management had none of the above, basically. So, for example, conventional potatoes were mouldboard ploughed in the fall prior to potatoes. So we ran it for 12 years, and we had rotations varying in length from 3 years to 6 years. So at the end of 12 years, you know, we had four cycles of the three-year rotation and down to two cycles of the six-year rotation, the longest one. So what are these rotations that we worked with over 12 years? We had a continuous wheat rotation, so it was thrown in there as a baseline, essentially. It's not really a rotation per se. And then we had a three-year rotation, which was potatoes, dry beans, and wheat, managed conventionally, and then exactly the same sequence managed with those four conservation practices that I mentioned earlier. Then we had a pair of 4-year rotations, the same thing, one managed conventionally and one with conservation practices, and the sequence being sugar beets, dry beans, potatoes and wheat. And then we had longer, we're stretching out here to 5-year rotation, and it was managed under conservation tillage, so we didn't have a conventional pairing with that one. So we had potatoes, wheat, sugar beet, wheat and dry beans. So 2 years of wheat and then the 3 row crops were there. And then our last one was the 6-year rotation, so it was again managed conservation practices. So it was oats taken off as green feed in July, timothy seeded in late August, 2 full years of timothy production, and then followed on with our 3 row crops, sugar beet, dry beans and potatoes. So each phase of each rotation appeared each year. So if you add up all those letters there, you actually get 26 rotation phases, and they appeared each year by 4 reps, so 104 plots, and our plot size was roughly 10 by 18 metres. And I'm going to focus actually on the dry bean phases for this presentation. So wide row beans versus narrow row beans. Wide row, traditionally grown on 60 centimetre rows, that was our conventional practice, relies on inter-row cultivation for weed control. Our target plant density was 28 seeds per metre squared. At harvest time there in the bottom slide, the undercutter comes in and leaves that unanchored residue on the soil surface. Also leaves quite a loose friable soil surface, so you can imagine that is prone to wind erosion over the winter period. Narrow row, 20 centimetre on our conservation rotations, the beans, our target plant density 46 seeds per metre squared. These top slide shows us planting into wheat stubble from the previous crop, and then at harvest time on the bottom there, more surface residue maintained and actually anchored stubble in narrow rows. We had 2 varieties. We started out with a black bean, UI906, and then we switched after 4 years to AC Red Bond. It's a small red bean. Narrow row beans, some of the positives with them, reduced erosion risk. As I mentioned, there's no inter-row cultivation. There's no undercutting at harvest. So generally, it's a higher residue system. Our erosion risk is somewhat reduced. Farmers getting into growing dry beans under narrow rows can essentially use their existing seeding and harvesting equipment. They don't need to get specialised equipment for dry beans. Some of the negatives of narrow row beans, you know, the question arose about slower emergence, especially under high residue conditions. You know, reduced yield, was that a perception or was it a real thing? Increased disease was mentioned at the outset, particularly white mold or sclerotinia, because of the narrow rows and tighter plant canopy, was it more prone to spreading white mold. Weed control, inter-row cultivation in June wasn't an option, so you're relying more heavily on herbicides for weed control in the narrow systems. And then there were questions about harvest losses as well. Some of these pods can be quite close to the surface and may not be picked up at harvest time. But then newer varieties were coming in which were more upright and maybe had better promise at reducing harvest losses. Our 3-year conservation narrow row beans were actually direct seeded into fall rye burn-off. So this is what the fall rye looked like in May. It was seeded the previous September after potatoes, and it varied in biomass production from, you know, quite low up to 2 tonnes per hectare, depending on the winter and spring period. Then we sprayed that off 1 week prior to bean seeding and direct seeded the beans into that fall rye burn-off. And that's what it looked like 9 days after seeding and 30 days after seeding. The 5-year conservation rotation, the narrow row beans were direct seeded into shredded wheat stubble. And that's what it looked like in the fall, just after seeding. About 2 weeks after seeding, you can see the beans emerging through the wheat stubble, and 40 days after seeding. So some results from the study, and as you can imagine, over 12 years with all these different rotations, all these different crops at play, there's quite a lot of results, so I'm going to distill it down to very simple graphs. I'm actually going to average the 12 years for the dry bean parameters. Rather than presenting samples from each individual year, that would be just a lot of data to look through. So I'm going to look at averages over 12 years. And that's the beauty of the long-term experiments, where you have each phase appearing each year. You can average over time and look at these different parameters. So we're going to look at plant density, height of maturity, days to maturity, incidence of sclerotinia, bacterial blight is another common disease in dry beans in Alberta, and finally yield. So what we have here on the bottom, on the x-axis, is the six different rotations that we're using. And the three-year conservation one is the fall rye burn-off, and then the shredded wheat stubble is marked there as well. So basically, this is each bar here represents the mean of 48 values, so the 12 years by the four reps. So there's quite a bit of data gone into these set of graphs here. So looking at plant density, as mentioned, we did seed lower density on our wide rows, and statistically, the two wide row, three-year conventional, four-year conventional, lower plant densities. The narrow row, actually the 4, 5, and 6 narrow row beans, no statistical effect there on plant density. However, the conservation one that's seeded into the fall rye burn-off did have a lower density than the other narrow row beans. But there was no difference actually between the shredded wheat stubble and the fall rye burn-off in terms of plant density. Looking at plant height, again, averaged over the 12 years, and when you run the stats on that, there was basically no significant effect of rotation or narrow versus wide row production on plant height over the 12 years. Days to maturity, and it's actually over 10 years, this parameter wasn't measured in 03 and 05, and this is days from seeding. And very consistent, the narrow row beans matured 4 days earlier than the wide row, so 104 versus 108 days. And that was consistent, very significant. The incidence of white mold, sclerotinia, averaged over 12 years. And this is percent infection. This is a visual assessment towards the end of the growing season. And when you ran the stats on that, you can see here that the conventional beans in wide rows, 6% on each, the 3 year and 4 year. When you move into narrow row bean production, the sclerotinia incidence was higher. And but you can see there was no difference actually between 3 year, 5 year, and 6 year for the sclerotinia on those conservation rotations. However, the shredded wheat stubble, that 5 year conservation rotation, did show reduced incidence of sclerotinia, 14%. Bacterial blight, this was another one. There was no difference. They were the same all across the board. No effect of rotation on bacterial blight. And this is a ranking from 0 to 5. So basically, they were all sort of 1.4 to 1.6. So they were sort of between 1 and 10% bacterial blight, but no effect of rotation. And lastly, our yields. So this is sort of distilling everything down to this one yield graph. And when we look at the results, and we'll actually put that 3 year conventional rotation at 100%, and we'll express everything else off that. And when you put everything through SAS, it came out no significant yield effect when averaged over 12 years. And even though some of the individual years, actually, some of the narrow rows did actually perform poorer than the wide rows in individual years. But when you average everything across the 12 years, there was no statistical difference between rotation and also between narrow row and wide row production. The maximum yield difference was actually 12% between that shredded wheat stubble and the 6 year rotation. But even that 12%, I think the p-value for this was actually 0.17. And I was at a talk yesterday, and one of the speakers said, for agronomy research, we should throw out this significant at 5% level. let's move it up to 25-30% when we're doing agronomy research. So I guess if we did that, we would have some different yield effects here. So in terms of summary, planting into narrow rows, there was some difference in density. Maturity, the narrow rows went faster. White mold incidence was reduced in wide rows compared to narrow rows. Bacterial blight not affected. No yield decline with narrow row production, performed as good as wide row. When we started the study in 2000, there was one grower in southern Alberta who was doing narrow row, and that's about 15% right now. And basically, it's on the rise in southern Alberta, narrow row production, which benefits conservation and soil quality. Thank you very much.